This edition of the Monocle Weekly was first broadcast on the 3rd of March 2013 on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to the Monocle Weekly, episode 191, with me, Robert Bounds, and Andrew Tuck.
Coming up on today's show, we'll hear from the outgoing US Secretary for Transport, Ray LaHood, as he reflects on his time in office.
In about 2 months, I'll probably walk out the door, and I have no idea what I'm going to do. We've made a difference, carried out the president's vision for high-speed rail, and really jump-started it in America.
And we'll speak to the man behind War Child about 20 years of great music and sweet charity.
And we'll hear what happens when this meets this.
And we should warn you that that package later in the show does include Andrew Tuck attempting to yodel. It's Trust Me, it's definitely worth waiting for. Plus, Tom Edwards will be here to look ahead to next week's news. That's all right here on the Monocle Weekly on Monocle 24. Says in the script, as is customary at the top of the show, what's happened this week? I've got no idea and I don't want to talk about it, even if I did.
Well, I can say what hasn't happened this week. It's been a very busy week at Monocle. We had a briefing from the Danish Foreign Ministry.
Hello.
And the gentleman who came from the Danish Foreign Ministry even had a Borgen jacket.
Did he?
Yes.
What is a Borgen jacket?
Well, it was a jacket. It said Borgen on the back.
like Alan Partridge's
Castrol GTX one.
I don't mean in this style.
It literally said Borgen on the back.
So we're not talking about the killing jumper. It's not a fashion accessory.
It's not something that's going to be reproduced
by Primark.
He had done some consulting for the actual TV series and they'd given him a coat, which is quite interesting, isn't it?
Are you regarding that as a soft power episode? Were you soft-powered this week by Borgen?
I'm always soft-powered by Borgen. I like Borgen.
Let's talk about closing the issue. Man alive, I'm glad this week's over. Yes, I feel like I've been put through...
It was a beast.
Feel like I've been put through a mangle.
First of all...
I look like it as well. Look at me.
You wrote a big piece about the Rijksmuseum.
I love that piece. I mean, I love the museum, right?
The photographs are amazing. I hear you had a good time.
I helped the photographer.
Good. Well done. Held your tripod, as you say. And what
people,
else?
Because that's people will be listening to that and going, okay. What do they mean? That's innuendo. And you never.
No, okay. Should we try and have a show without innuendo?
Yeah, let's have a show without innuendo.
But then what will we talk about?
I don't know.
Okay, let's try it. Let's try it anyway.
Well, we can try it. All we can do is try, Andrew. It's been a long and busy week. The May issue of Monocle's been put to bed.
Yes.
Finally. It was like a kind of baby that kept on spitting out its dummy, wouldn't lie on its front or back or whatever. I'm not a father, you can tell that. But it was a bit of a troublesome child, wasn't it? But thank God it's gone. And a handsome issue it is too.
Very handsome. But at the moment, for another couple of weeks, there's the nice German issue on newsstand. So can you buy that one instead?
We're going to move it up a notch. It's, of course, the Monocle Weekly. It's episode 191. I've got a feeling that's going to be a lucky number. What does that equal? It equals 11 if we add those numbers up. Here's the man. It sounds like a bingo call. We're going to head straight over to the crystal ball held in the hands of Tom Edwards.
This is the news with Tom Edwards.
Man alive. It gets weirder, doesn't it, this programme? What's happened?
That's Doreen Kutzka, who's going to be on later on.
I loved her.
And we asked her when she was warming up to yodel your news introduction this week.
I think something really special has just happened.
Isn't that
quite frightening in some ways? It's a tone.
No, I think it's really nice.
Really? It's got a sinister note.
Welcome, Tom, to the show. What's in your sheaf of papers? Which news stories are you going to highlight for our listeners' delectation this week?
Well, I'd like to start with something a little lighter, a little frothier, perhaps.
Okay.
Today, it's a special day. The World Health Organization has decreed that today is a day associated with one particular part of the body. Would you like me to tell you which?
Go on, then. I was going to say something that sounded
better than us guessing,
Don't let Rob guess. It's International Ear Day.
Christ.
Why do they have International Ear Day?
This is very important because the World Health
Organization... There's a shortage of them, I hear.
Well, no, this is very serious, Andrew. Glib remarks aside, recent global estimates suggest that, particularly in slightly older people, 165 million people lose their hearing.
I thought you were going to say lose their ears.
Lose their ears. No, but it's about hearing. No,
okay. So we have a jumper with a very tight collar.
Hearing day, then.
Well, it is. It's ear and hearing day. That's what it's okay. called. I was just using a short form. But I think because we work in an audio, you know, medium, it's important to recognise that and to remember how important that particular sensory experience is. Listen to the yodelling. Imagine if you were denied the privilege of hearing that yodel. How empty your world might be.
Very empty.
It's very important for people to pay attention to the hearing. And I suggest people tune into Monocle 24 and use it as this kind of a gauge of how good their hearing is.
Yeah, I'm deaf as a post. I think it's through lots of, going to see lots of bands and lots of loud music.
You are now a statistic.
And brawling and fighting.
Having your ears boxed.
Literally. Okay, let's move it on.
Serious news. Now, Monday, tomorrow, it's the Kenyan elections. We'll all remember in 2007, the last time there were elections, violence beset the whole process. Very, very interesting to watch. It's something of a powder keg. You've got one of the front runners for the presidency is the Prime Minister, Odinga. His main rival is Uhuru Kenyatta, who himself has been indicted by the ICC, the Criminal Court in The Hague. Also in the mix, you've got William Ruto, who's also been indicted by the ICC. Him and Kenyatta have this sort of loose affiliation, but it's basically going to be Odinga versus Kenyatta. One of the main problems, of course, in Kenya is that it's still largely riven along the lines of, if you like, sort of ethnic lines in the country. And I think one of the fears from tomorrow is, have enough of those differences, those divides, been addressed since 2007? Or are we going to see the same kind of problems that we saw last time? And people are certainly fairly worried about that.
So is it being billed as a clean fight?
I think
is it a fairly reliable electoral process?
Well, in so much as, you know, they've tried to make improvements to the electoral processes, and I think people are more optimistic about that. But the underlying fear is that the kind of conflict points last time, which were generally more about ethnic divisions rather than political ones, could still be bubbling under the surface. And it'll be very interesting to see whether...
And oddly, they've done some good things around the political debate. They've tried to kind of usher that onto TV, haven't they? They've tried to get the candidates up against each other a little bit more, I guess maybe to kind of let off steam prior to the event almost.
Well, I think that's really important, actually. I watched the presidential debates. They were very sort of Western. They had a much more statesmanlike quality. And to get these people all on TV together, I think you're exactly right. Hopefully that helps to demystify it. I think a lot of because there's these ethnic divisions, a lot of it is almost, you know, the stuff of legend. People are given rumours about what people's intentions would be if they were in power and the risks that would pose to rival camps. And to see people on TV hopefully demystifies a lot of that and removes a lot of those kind of threats. Let's move on to some other things. Tuesday, the Internationale Tourismus Bourse, the ITB in Berlin. This is one of the sort of world's premier travel and tourism events. Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, of course, will be opening the event along with the Indonesian president, Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono. This is pretty exciting. It's a really important junket. There's a lot of really interesting trends developing. Abu Dhabi, for example, are sending a massive delegation, bigger than they've ever sent before.
Abu Dhabi, is that two football teams from Abu playing each other?
nice work. But the ITB will be reporting from there. We'll be reporting from there during the week on Monocle 24. Very interesting to watch the trends. Huge business, of course. It's, you know, it's like bigger than the automobile industry, nearly as big as the banking industry. Travel and tourism, critically important, and the big guns are wheeled out ITB Berlin. So we'll be getting lots of reports from there.
Book your holiday here.
Well, on which subject, Andrew? Another thing that's interesting.
Are you going to try and put a holiday form in?
Yeah. Can you do my expenses? Yeah.
I shall not be back for a few weeks. Iraq Airways,
yes,
resuming their flights from Baghdad International to London Gatwick on Tuesday. I think this is a moment to celebrate. Stopped regular operations way back in 1990, the first Gulf War, but its Airbus A330s and A320s will be operating on a weekly basis between London and Baghdad.
We should get someone on that plane. That's a good story for us.
That's a good story.
Lots of excitement this week, yeah. And I've got one final transport story. Mm. Can I share this one with you? Geneva Motor Show on Thursday.
I'm against that.
Well, this is what's interesting. I've picked out a vehicle for each of you, which let me share. These are new vehicles that are being released.
Yep.
Now, for Andrew, a man of discrimination, taste, the Rolls-Royce Wraith.
Yes.
Does that sound about Andrew Tuck-esque?
That sounds quite nice.
Strong sense of linear purpose.
Okay.
That's Andrew Tuck, not the Rolls Royce. Oh, dear. The sort of the dynamic potential of an athlete in the starting blocks. This is going to be...
is this Andrew again? Or?
It's a 6.6 litre V12 twin turbo engine. Over 600 horsepower.
Oh, God, that sounds good.
That's more horses than there are in 600 Findus burgers.
And what have you chosen for Rob?
For Rob, I thought something a little even more exciting than that. Lamborghini, Rob.
Yes.
Are launching their fastest ever automobile.
Wow.
At Geneva this week. Fewer than 10 will be produced. Can you credit that? But that counts as a full production run. It's, again, V12. It might be called the RB V12. RB, Robert Brown. That's almost uncanny.
That's amazing.
Now, it might be a little pricey.
Yeah.
But it promises earth-shattering performance. Much like Robert Brown, you might say.
Hello! What are you going to have for yourself, Tom?
Something more humble, probably.
A smart car.
Yeah, well, maybe the, you know, newly nipped and tucked Fiat 500 Abarth Special Edition. Why not?
Tom Edwards, I love your news look ahead. Thank you so much for coming in and talking us through light and shade, serious and slightly silly and slightly amusing. You've turned up the corners of our mouths in the right direction, hasn't he, Andrew?
Yeah. Well, we did get a yodel for you. I think we've repaid him slightly.
Thanks, Simon. That was actually pretty emotional, that yodeling. You know, that's going to stay with me.
Tom Edwards, thank you very much indeed. Have a lovely Sunday. And coming up next, we're going to be speaking to Ray LaHood.
Outgoing US Secretary of Transport Ray LaHood, who's been one of America's biggest advocates for high-speed rail, is expected to end his time in government over the next month. It hasn't been an easy ride for LaHood, securing more funding for transport, but failing to see that translate into high-speed rail projects.
Keen listeners to Monocle 24 will know that last week we ran a series on both The Globalist and The Monocle Daily about high-speed rail. From Tokyo to New York, Kuala Lumpur to London, we explored where high-speed rail's been and where it's headed next. Our editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé, caught up with Ray LaHood for the series, but it wasn't just rail they touched on. So here on The Monocle Weekly is a chance to kick your shoes off, sit back and enjoy the full thing. Pretty much.
Secretary LaHood, there's a lot of discussion right now about the whole notion of sequester. And as we were talking just before we went on air, it's very hard for a lot of people to get their head around it. I'm sure people north of the border in Canada can't quite figure it out. I'm sure probably even people on the other side in Michigan and Illinois don't quite understand it either. Nevertheless, we're talking about a massive amount of cash that will have to be cut by the end of this week if it's not found. But I'm also hearing that there's a late-breaking reprieve for aviation, that cuts we may not come into effect by March 1st. You probably got until April 1st when we look at things, at least on the side of the FAA?
Yeah, here's the way it really works. It begins on March 1st, but it really doesn't take effect until April 1st. So we will begin to phase in what we have to do in terms of furloughing FAA employees, which are the largest number of employees. At DOT, we have 55,000 employees, but more than half of those are FAA, so we have to come up with $1 billion, and $600 million has to be from FAA, so there's going to be a lot of pain, and obviously safety will be our number one priority, but there will be some furloughs of controllers and some closing of some control towers around the country, and that is just going to be very painful for the flying public, because airlines are going to have to begin to restrict the number of flights that in and out of airports. And it really affects the whole aviation system in a way that I think people don't really realize, but will soon come to realize 30 days after the sequester kicks in.
Secretary LaHood, explain this. If I'm listening in Lebanon or Australia or Belgium at the moment, when you talk about closures of towers and also furloughs for FAA employees, so you're talking about unpaid leave and also these are temporary closures of these towers, or if money's not found, these towers never reopen, just so an international audience can understand.
Oh, look, you've hit it on the head. What it means for Americans is that they could experience between 60 and 90 minute delays at major airports around the country because we won't have the same number of controllers controlling planes, and to meet our safety standards so that flying continues to be the safest possible, planes will have to slow down, flights will have to be canceled, and the staging of flights in and out of airports will have to change. For the foreign traveler, what it will mean is that flying in and out of JFK or Dulles or Chicago, there could be serious delays in getting in and out of those hub airports because, again, controllers will be furloughed. And in some instances, where these towers will be closed, it may be that they'll never open again. Not, obviously, the big hubs, Dulles, JFK, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco. Obviously, they're always going to be open. But in some of the smaller airports, for them to close, it's conceivable that if we don't have the resources, we won't be able to reopen them.
We've had this conversation before, and you mentioned Dulles, which, even on the best days, is not great for the international traveler. I know your friend at Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, is saying also international travelers, if they're used to maybe, an hour, 90 minutes, they could be looking at many, many hours entering the United States. Is there much of a discussion what this does for brand USA right now, Mr. LaHood?
In terms of aviation, we've always bragged about the fact that we have the safest aviation system, and we're not going to compromise on that. But in terms of on-time arrival, in terms of frustration on the part of the flying public, it's going to go up because on-time arrivals, people are going to experience between 60 and 90-minute delays on domestic flights, and we calculate that it could be higher for foreign flights. And certainly, people waiting in TSA lines, Secretary Napolitano announced at the White House yesterday that she's going to have to furlough TSA employees who are the ones that screen people coming through Dulles or coming through JFK, which means the lines will be longer and the frustrations will be higher.
So not great for the coffers of people in charge of looking for money, at least from inbound tourists to the United States. I want to turn our attention to the ground. And over the years, Mr. LaHood, you and I have talked a lot about high-speed rail. And as, of course, you're outbound from your current post, when you look back over the last few years, is it a source of disappointment that things didn't, A, move a little bit faster or get a little bit further down the track with all of these grand plans that were discussed, of course, very early on, first round of the administration?
Well, look, first of all, I am very optimistic about high-speed rail for America. And I'll tell you the reason, because the president was reelected. This is his vision. And in 4 short years, we have invested $12 billion in the United States. That does not count any of the money that's been invested by the states, any of the money that's been invested by foreign companies. That's just the federal commitment, and that commitment will remain. Any budget that the president has ever put out over the last 4 years has included money for high-speed rail. High-speed rail is coming to America. 200-mile-an-hour trains in the next 10 years in California, connecting the entire state. Illinois will be connected from, it'll include Michigan to Chicago, Chicago to St. Louis, trains going 110 miles per hour with new infrastructure and new cars. Along the Northeast Corridor, over in the neighborhood of between $1 billion and $2 billion invested in the corridor, in infrastructure, in new cars, and in states where we have great partners. The future is very bright for high-speed rail because the president was reelected, because this is his vision, because we've committed $12 plus billion in 4 short years, we're on our way, and there's no stopping us. We will not be dissuaded by a few detractors, and we are moving ahead.
Well, some would say there's more than a few detractors in the U.S. It's great that we're going to be able to buy tickets and jump on the platform. Where, if you're a betting man, will it be California first? Is it going to be San Francisco to L.A.? That's really the first place that Americans and, of course, visitors are going to be able to experience what the rest of the world knows as serious high-speed rail?
I think that if you look at Illinois, I was on a train in Illinois that now has increased speeds from 79 miles per hour to 110. I was on that inaugural train and very proud of it because that's my home state, and we've invested over $2 billion, and that does not count the money that the state has put in. Governor Quinn has been a great partner. Along the Northeast Corridor, people have been experiencing on-time arrivals at costs that they can afford from Washington to New York, and we're making huge investments in Massachusetts, in Vermont, in Maine, in North Carolina. We are extending the Northeast Corridor and will continue to do that. Now, in California, they will have 200-mile-an-hour trains, and we're going to turn a shovel of dirt here very soon in the Central Valley And we've already made a commitment in San Francisco with the Trans Bay project, where we invested $500 million. So California's on its way. And Governor Brown, I was just with him at the White House yesterday, and he is fully committed to this. And the Assembly in California just passed a bill to sell $8 billion worth of bonds as their match. So California's on its way.
You seem pretty focused on the fact that no matter what, and no matter how many sort of naysayers are out there, people will be going at high speed, at ground level pretty soon.
Yes, I am. I'm optimistic about it. Now, in California, it'll take 10 years. In Illinois, they're on their way. As I said, they'll have trains going 110 miles per hour. On the Northeast Corridor, it's more difficult to get trains to a higher speed. We're working on it with our friends from Amtrak. But the fact is, they have an aging infrastructure there. That train from Washington to New York is shoehorned between a lot of communities, some big communities. But our investments north of New York and south of Washington are good investments and new investments, and with partners who are very reliable.
What do your handover notes look like? I'm sure you haven't drawn them up completely, but for whoever comes in to fill, one has to say that Ray LaHood as transportation secretary was probably one of the first times that you became a bit of a global brand as part of this administration. So the rather large shoes that need to be filled for the incoming transportation secretary, what do they need to do?
They need to continue to carry out the president's vision. Look, at what we've done for 4 years is visionary because of President Obama's vision for more transit, more walking and biking paths, more livable and sustainable communities, really giving people transportation options. We've built an interstate system over 50 years in the United States, and we're going to continue to keep it in a state of good repair. But the new secretary will also have to work on a new transportation bill and work with Congress on finding the funding to keep America number one. We have fallen way behind in infrastructure. We are not number one right now. We've fallen way behind other countries and other regions of the world. And in order to get back to being number one, we have to find the resources to pass a 5-year transportation bill and to continue to make investments in a lot of different alternative transportation. We have a great interstate system. We have 50-year-old transit systems in every major city in America, and we have to make sure we continue to keep those updated.
As you've been traveling around the world over the last few years, benchmarking, meeting with your colleagues in other administrations around the world, Mr. LaHood, who do you look up to right now? If you're talking to whoever is going to take over your post and also those in your administration, who should they be keeping their eyes on? What countries, what models have you looked to and said, we need a bit of this in the United States?
I think that when it comes to high-speed rail, Spain has developed some really, really good trains and ones that are really high-speed trains and deliver people on time. I've always been impressed with Japan's train system. I think it's one of the best, and they continue to improve it. When it comes to roads and bridges and airports and infrastructure that we think of in a more traditional way, China is way ahead of everybody. And they're way ahead because they're making huge, huge investments in roads, in bridges, in airports. And they're way ahead when it comes to that. But other countries are ahead when it comes to high-speed rail. And America has fallen behind. And in order to get to be number one, we have to make investments. And we just haven't done that in the last few years.
Do you think part of that as well is also people just not getting out enough? You still have a country, of course, the world's biggest economy, but everyone is often surprised that there still aren't that many passports, given the sheer number of Americans. And is some of it just also seeing, believing? You know, as you said, once you try an Italian train, well, even an Italian train, in fact, you can ride from Milan to Naples. It's a very impressive service, in a country which doesn't have great infrastructure. Is that part of it? Do you even think, in Congress, other people would be convinced? They don't believe it right now because they actually don't know what it's like.
You know, you make a very good point. And I say all the time, people that travel to Europe and Asia come back scratching their heads, having ridden a train that was on time, that was fast, that was affordable, and they want to know why we don't have trains like that in America. And it's because we've had no vision in America for passenger rail. And we do now. with President Obama and this administration and the investments that we've made. We've been at this a little over 4 years, and we've invested $12 billion from the national government. And again, that doesn't include the private dollars, and it doesn't include states have put in. So we've come a long way in 4+ years, but we have a long way to go. And it does take people going to Europe and Asia and riding good trains, whether it's in Italy or Spain or Japan, and testing the comfort and testing the speed and testing the price and finding out that it can be done. Then they come back to America and they say, you know, this is what we need to do here.
Finally, just before we go, what next for Ray LaHood? I guess we're talking a couple of months, I guess, until everyone is settled in. And of course, there's full approval on the Hill for your successor.
That's exactly right. Now that the president has been able to put a secretary of state in place with John Kerry, Senator Hagel will be voted on this week, and he'll be sworn in as secretary of defense. John Brennan will get a vote and will become CIA director. Jack Lew will get a vote this week and become Treasury Secretary. These are the sort of the top-tier cabinet posts in the sense that they needed to have those vacancies filled. Those vacancies are filled. The president will then work his way down the list for labor and transportation. He's named an interior designee. So he's working his way down, and I think within a couple of months there'll be a replacement here, which has to be confirmed by the Commerce Committee of the Senate. But in about 2 months, I'll probably walk out the door, and I have no idea what I'm going to do. This has been the best job I've ever had. I've been in government 35 years. I served in the U.S. House of Representatives for 14 years, which I thought was a great job. By far, this is the best job because we've made a difference. We've improved safety. We've highlighted safety. We've improved many forms of transportation. We've carried out the president's vision for high-speed rail and really jump-started it in America. And we walk out the door with our head held high. They're still applauding for us, and we've accomplished a lot.
That was outgoing Secretary of Transport Ray LaHood speaking to our editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé.
And this is the Monocle Weekly. Next up, we'll be talking to the man behind War Child's 20th anniversary album. Welcome back to The Monocle Weekly with me, Robert Bounds, and Andrew Tuck. War Child likes to think of itself as a small charity with big ambitions. For 20 years now, they've been helping children in war-torn areas by rebuilding schools and providing medical care and a list of other critical activities which help these most vulnerable and innocent victims of war when they need it most.
They've also been gathering support from the British music industry on the way. They've released 5 albums featuring some of the top names in music, from Paul Weller to Radiohead. They've also released unique singles and staged impressive concerts, raising millions of pounds in the process. At the recent Brits, they were given the first ever Special Recognition Award. To celebrate their 20th anniversary, they've released a best of, collating the highlights of this musical journey to date. And to tell us more, Rob spoke to Ben Knowles, music and fundraising director for War Child.
Ben, thanks for joining us on The Weekly. And I should say happy birthday. Happy 20th birthday to War Child as well.
Yes, no, unfortunately not 20th birthday to me. That's a distant memory. Yeah, 20th anniversary of War Child, 20 years of amazing work that the really important people in the organisation, the people we have on the ground in war zones around the world, 20 years of the amazing work they've done changing and saving the lives of innocent children whose lives are torn apart by war.
And I wanted to ask you about, it's an amazing brand, War Child, it's an amazing brand as a charity to be quite so synonymous with not just music and putting out charity records, but with kind of amazing records and getting really unusual and difficult to book groups of artists together. How did that all kick off?
It started very early in War Child's history. War Child was founded back in 1993 in response to the Bosnian conflict, and the first big music project that War Child pulled together was an album called Help in 1995. And it was very much born out of anger that the impact that this conflict was having on children in mainland Europe. Children were starving to death on the streets of mainland Europe, less than 60, 70 miles from Venice. And there was a huge anger that wasn't getting the attention that it deserved. And it was only going to take a small amount of money initially to start feeding these children. And War Child, together with the music industry, went, look, we can do something about this. And that mobilised the support of artists really quickly. The Help album was recorded famously in 24 hours. The likes of Radiohead, Oasis, Massive Attack, Blur, Paul Weller, quite remarkably, if anybody remembers the Stone Roses back in the 1990s, they recorded a track in 24 hours, which was something of an achievement. and that was real urgency on behalf of the artist. But the other thing that stuck with War Child since was that the artists felt compelled to do something above and beyond what they would normally be willing to contribute to a charity album because of the urgency and the real strong appeal that cause had. And that's something that stuck with War Child since. I think implied in your question is that charity music are not necessarily the most credible of bedfellows. A charity record is not a kind of a badge that this is going to be brilliant and amazing. A lot of charity records are exactly the opposite of that. And War Child battled really hard against that by engaging artists in the work that we do, getting their support for what we do, and then hoping that when they go into the studio or onto the stage to perform for us, that they take a little bit of that with them, and that commitment, that enthusiasm and that energy they have behind what we're doing comes through in the quality of what they record for us.
And the record that's just out last week, I think, is obviously the greatest hits. It's the best of the best of 20 years. Are there any kind of amusing stories? I feel that, not necessarily stories of clashing egos, but trying to get, there's a lovely video, I think it's the Come Together, it's from the Help album, and it's McCartney, Noel Gallagher and Paul Weller kind of getting together. What was the vibe like sort of during these days and putting that record together?
Yeah, I mean, that was recorded at Abbey Road Studios and was very much led by Paul Weller, who invited McCartney and invited Noel to come and join him. McCartney wasn't guaranteed. There was no kind of confirmation that he was going to be there. So Weller and Noel Gallagher were in the studio prepared to record the version Come Together as a duo. Noel roped in some of his mates to come and help out. So the track, pretty much unannounced, I think. I don't think it's on the inner sleeve that it does it, but Johnny Depp plays guitar on it. Kate Moss plays tambourine.
One thing I can tell you is you got to be free. Come together.
Several members of Ocean Colour Scene were roped in to kind of be the backing band. Carleen Anderson sings on it. So it was already a pretty mega supergroup. And then Paul McCartney did turn up mid-afternoon, Linda in tow taking photographs. Stella was there. She was good mates with Kate. So it was an amazing atmosphere in the studio. I was fortunate enough to be there and seeing Noel and Paul Weller's face when they were in the presence of a Beatles. This is quite early on in Noel's career and quite early on in the renaissance of Paul Weller as a credibly and critically acclaimed artist. And for them to kind of be in the presence of Paul McCartney recording a Beatles track in Abbey Road is a memory I think that will live long with everybody who was fortunate enough to be there.
And these are the kind of images that are so easy for the public to sort of consume and get excited about. And this all is kind of grist to the mill, I guess, of getting the message across and getting money directly to the kids that need it. Can you tell us where the money actually goes, Ben? What sort of projects War Child are doing?
Yeah, music's always served two purposes for us. It obviously does raise some money for us. It contributes a small percentage of our required income, but it's been important throughout the 20 years of that. But it's been really invaluable in raising awareness of the work that we do. A lot of our work is in places that have figured on the news agenda. You know, we do work in Afghanistan. We've worked in Iraq for nearly a decade. We work in Democratic Republic of Congo, and the terrible uprising of the rebel groups in East DRC has got media attention recently. And we do have projects now on the ground in northern Lebanon, right on the border with Syria, working with Syrian refugee children. But what music has done throughout the years is allow us to talk about the conflicts which don't get the media attention, don't figure on your nightly news, don't grab the mainstream newspaper front pages. Conflicts like the Central African Republic, where we work increasingly at the moment, where Joseph Kony, famously of last year's Invisible Children video and the LRA, they're holed up in Central African Republic at the moment, and the number of children being abducted there increases by the month, and with horrific consequences for the life and the security and the protection of children. And that's a conflict which doesn't get media attention. And one of the great benefits of having the support we've had from the music industry and then the attendant media interest that has on War Child allows us to talk about these conflicts which otherwise don't get discussed and are therefore impossible for us to raise money for.
All right, Ben, well, what better way, I guess, to get across the vibe of the War Child experience than to ask you to kind of kill one of your darlings, really. And I'm going to have to ask you to choose your favourite track from that 20th anniversary record, Ben. What are we going to spin?
The track which will kind of go down in my memory is the track which kind of defined the amount of energy, enthusiasm, commitment artists put into War Child was Radiohead wrote a track specifically for the Help album, a track called Lucky, and they loved it so much that it went onto OK Computer and became a really pivotal track, not only in the history of War Child, but also in the history of Radiohead. And it's a yardstick by which we push artists to commit to a synth, and it's a track that definitely bears standing of the 18 years that it's been in our arsenal, and it's certainly a track that deserves its place in our best of.
Cool. Well, Ben Knowles, music and fundraising director of War Child, thanks very much for joining us on The Weekly.
That was Lucky by Radiohead from War Child 20, The Best Of, which is out now. This is the Monocle Weekly. Up next is what you've all been waiting for, Urban Yodeling.
Urban Yodeling? What's that then, Andrew, when it's at home? Where have you suddenly come from?
I went
from?
All country, didn't I?
You've gone right down Bridport away, haven't you? We should say welcome back to the Monocle Weekly. You haven't accidentally tuned into the Archers. It's me, Robert Bounds, and Andrew Tuck. Now, yodeling is often a pastime associated with alpine mountains, sheep herding, and lederhosen. But our next guest is seeking to change all that, bringing her well-kept vocal cords down from the hills and into the grit of Kreuzberg.
Doreen Kutzke, or Kutzkelina as she's known, is an urban yodeler, combining traditional vocals with dub and electronic beats to breathe some new life into the art form. And she doesn't just perform it, she's been teaching the residents of Berlin too.
And she's here with us now in the studio. But before we chat, let's hear her first song. This is Doreen's take on Bob Dylan's track, You Ain't Going Nowhere. Take it away.
Clouds so swift, rain won't lift, gate won't close, railings froze. Get your mind off winter time, you ain't going nowhere. Ooh wee, ride me high, tomorrow's the day my man's gonna come. Whoa, I don't Pick up your money and pack up your chant. You ain't go nowhere. Ooh wee, ride me high. Tomorrow's the day my man's gonna come. Whoa, we're gonna fly down in the easy chair. Yodelay.
Kalina, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
That sounded absolutely amazing. We'd had a little mess around on SoundCloud and YouTube and the like to kind of fix an idea in our heads of what it sounded like, but it sounds quite amazing live, doesn't it, Andrew?
Incredible. It's one of those funny things when you're sitting next to somebody who has that much amount of energy coming out. It makes you quiver almost. It's quite exciting sitting next to you. Amazing.
Power voice.
Yeah, right. It's warm.
Yodeling
up no
is
end.
Always just something really powerful. And yeah, maybe you can just fear people with yodeling, I think. So.
Fear them.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I'm feeling it. I'm not fearing it. Although the hairs are up on the back of my neck, probably. It's not just because the studio is cold, is it?
No.
It's a proper musical thing.
And can you tell us what the roots were of you learning to yodel? Because I understand you were born in communist East Germany.
Yes.
Was there much yodeling around there?
Yes, there was. I grew up in a mountain area called Harz Mountains and little village, and there was one woman teaching yodeling, and I was very fascinated about that. And I was, okay, I want to learn it.
Yeah, because it's one of those things we associate with the Swiss Alps. We kind of associate it with the sound
yes,
of music.
Always,
we associate
but it's,
it with a bit more of a dusty kind of kind of chocolate box idea of that neck of the woods, right?
Journal and...
Exactly. Yeah. We should also say that Dorian is... is beautiful blonde German woman, I can see a tattoo on your right arm there,
and on the left
arm. There is not a dirndl in sight.
No,
which I'm disappointed by things like
just
that. Today,
my black dirndl, black metal dirndl.
Yeah, exactly. So you broke out of that neck of the woods with your yodeling intact, with your yodeling head on. And you worked in Berlin clubs doing something similar to what you do now?
Yes, I try to yodel on top of electronics or some house music or just like an MC.
Yeah.
And because it's non-verbal, it's very easy just to yodel onto beats or hip-hop. Of course, you can yodel on jazz if you want. So it's free, and I'm on the mission.
So you're saying, you're basically asking, we're going to be asking us for Kanye's phone number at the end of this interview.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hook you up.
It's funny, Dorian, over the years, being here, we've met lots of interesting musicians. And there's a little connection that you remind me with some of the people we've met from, like the Sami people up in the north. When they come, they often have this kind of it's not a yodel, but it's
a joik.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When I hear you do that, you suddenly hear this kind of herding instinct, this kind of call across the wild.
Yeah, it's a shepherd's call, or so you can use yodeling for your profession. It's a kind of special singing, which is so powerful that maybe the people from the village behind the mountain can hear you.
Yeah, right. It's a proper thing. I mean, obviously, we're in the studio today, and we're all mic'd up. You're mic'd up. But you don't need a microphone. You could do this. We could actually be in a soundproof studio. You could be down in Malibu High School. We could probably hear you. That's a good thing. Tell us about the instrument as well. What's that? It kind of looks a little harpy.
Yes. This is an auto harp. This is just an American adaptation from a sitar. So it's called idiot sitar as well. As you can see here, all the chords are there,
okay.
and they got muted. This is the G.
That's a beautiful noise.
It's very beautiful, and it looks so good, I think.
It looks really good. It looks really good. We're going to have to take some pictures of this, and they should find themselves onto our website.
June Carter was playing the auto harp, or the whole Carter family.
Right.
And Dora, can I ask you, when you started appearing on bills in Berlin and people saw that you were, I don't know how you bill yourself in German, as an urban yodeler, but do you think that people first of all came to see you and think it might be a funny thing, or you might be a bit crazy, kind of cabaret person?
Yes.
And so you had to kind of break some stereotypes, because you're doing something that, again, it's almost like blues or something. It's quite beautiful hearing you with this harp.
It's a mixture from country, old country music, into blues, into some kind of beat music. Yes, I got always the reactions about this. Ah, this is funny. This is just like something cabaret. I'm fine with it.
The phrasing to your yodeling,
yeah,
that sounded kind of like a mountain yearning song. Do you have an image in your head? Because there's obviously no words, but do you have an image in your head of where you are and maybe who's singing?
Sometimes, yeah. So I think you recognize I closed my eyes.
I was almost weeping here at the other side of the studio.
Of course, sometimes I need the image of space around. And it's not connected to this alpine area image. Sometimes it's really much more comfortable to imagine that you have a lot of space around you.
I felt like that was probably mountaintop stuff there, right?
Doran, can I ask you, you said you're very removed from that world of the chocolate box Swiss alpine yodeler, but I presume they know what you're up to. Do you have any crossover? Do you get invited to yodeling competitions?
Sometimes, really, it happens. And but I was invited for a yodeling event in Amsterdam, which is not the yodeling city. So
it's not well known for it, but I guess they're turning their hand to most things. We've got a thing we wanted to ask you. Here's the rub. You're a yodeling teacher.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, Andrew's kind of rolling his eyes at me.
Because he knows I've got the word.
I've got a bit of a cold, though.
Where I'm thinking.
Poor guy.
We might ask you to teach us something. But first, you've got to describe where you do some of your teaching.
Yeah.
I think you got a bit of a grotto in Berlin, in Kreuzberg, right?
Yeah. It's called, or it's named, Yodeling School Kreuzberg. And it's not a building, of course. Don't run the huge yodeling school. People are coming at my home and I teach yodeling there. I have very friendly neighbors.
So that's a relief.
They are used to it. And workshops I do in Kreuzberg as well. Yodeling is it's very easy. So I can just give you an example. It's you have to break your voice from the chest voice to the falsetto and back.
Okay, I've got to do a bit of a cough first, because I'm... Andrew, do you want to start?
I'm not even sure where my chest voice is, actually, but I can...
Chest voice, you...
Chest
you,
is this now,
is,
right?
This is your chest voice. Yeah.
Okay, this is my chest voice.
So you have to focus your chest voice into a really, it's really like shouting, so maybe go one step...
It's okay.
Hey!
Yeah, exactly.
Hey!
Yeah.
Hey!
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
Hey!
You're really close.
Yeah. Hey!
And not longer.
I might get a taxi in a minute, I think.
And try to hold it a little bit longer, like, hey!
Hey!
This is great.
Super. And now, this is the first part of yodeling, so it was just a half yodel. Now, you know your falsetto voice, where it is a head voice, it's, ee! Ooh!
Here goes.
Yeah. Excellent. Brilliant.
I and think maybe you'll get a whale yeah. rather than a taxi, don't you?
And okay. really, yodeling is very close to laughing, so yeah. it's okay. the same energy. You will feel better.
Okay, I'm coming to Kreuzberg.
Connect those both voices like, hey!
I'm in the wrong place. Let's try again. Yeah. Give me it one more time. Give me it one more time.
Yeah. Do
Okay, here goes. I think I need more lessons.
Yeah. Okay. You had started on okay. the chest first. Okay. Try first the chest again once
I think,
again.
I think you're very good because this is the first time you've ever yodeled. Yeah. yeah. Other than that other time, which we hey. Don't try.
So the chest about. The chest is like,
hey.
Hey. Hey. Okay.
Hey.
Hey. Yeah. And I'm starting here, then going up.
Yeah.
Hold on, everyone.
This is excellent.
I think you're safe in your job. Okay.
That's really good.
Very good.
Oh, I think we should, I think Doreen, you and I should give a little round of applause for Andrew. Well.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. It's a good
Thank
first
you.
Attempt.
So brave.
I'm quite warm now.
I think there's a lot of goats looking for their master. You can hear them clanking up Chilton Street.
I wonder what
Street.
Was scratching at the door.
All right, before we move on to that next challenge for Andrew, we should have an... I think we're going to have another track. We're going to have our third and final track,
Yes,
Doreen.
This is a lullaby. Oh. It's really... you can do a lullaby yodel as well. It's not always the joy and the happiness and happy yodel because there are blue yodels and so lullaby yodels as well.
Yalla by loads. What's happened to me?
That's more Lebanese version. Yalla by loads.
So I think we're going to end on this, actually, Doreen. We're going to have you're going to sing us all to sleep.
Yeah.
With this beautiful lullaby. Thank you so much for teaching us yodeling and for sounding so beautiful. It's absolutely wonderful.
It's amazing, Doreen. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was urban yodeler Doreen Kutzke there. And if you want to find out a bit more, visit her website, kutzkelina.de. A very haunting sound, urban yodeling.
Well, when I did it, do you mean?
The hairs were standing on the back of my blank.
Well, I think I might have scared every kind of sheep away in the valley if I had done that.
I expect when we open the doors of Midori House, there's going to be a sort of like a flock, isn't there? There's going to be some goats up on the top there.
What I liked was how you...
Some cattle outside Hardy's grazing.
You quickly suggested the idea and then got out of doing it yourself.
Someone had to take charge, and I've had a cold this week, so my vocal cords, I didn't think were up to it. Yodeler, hee hee.
Whereas mine were...
I think you manned up, and I think you manned up and played like Murray.
I think I may have to head to Kreuzberg for a few more lessons. But actually, that was one of my favourite things for ages.
When we heard that Doreen was coming on the show, I think we all kind of arched an eyebrow somewhat, and we sometimes have some amusing, silly features on the show. But that was a really beautiful thing. She obviously takes her music quite seriously. She's a very lovely woman, wasn't she? She was a very beguiling figure.
Yeah, really, really charming, and I think it was sweet that she said, you know, people often think I'm going to do some kind of cabaret, and I can't quite do it
in the
German accent, but it was good. Yeah. And she's right, there's something just incredibly touching and moving about hearing somebody use their voice in that kind of really simple way.
Yeah, it's very primal. And that thing as well, that there not being any words means it's something kind of really, it's a sort of, yeah, it's a little bit of primal reach out, isn't it? Not a reach around, that's a different thing. Let's not get involved in that. It's only midday on Sunday, isn't it, Andrew?
It certainly is. I think we should maybe draw it to a close there, Mr.
We
Bound.
Should possibly draw it to a close. Doreen's now in Barley Mow. That's where we sent her. Just to say, other pubs in Marylebone are available. Thank you, Andrew. It's been a nice show.
I've loved it.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to episode 191 of the Monocle Weekly. Today's show was produced by Dawn Trump and Katie Bilbao and researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. And our studio manager was Jackie P, Jack Phillips. We'll be back same time next week. But until then, from me, Robert Bound.
And me, Andrew Tuck.
Thanks for tuning in.